Today's program has been brought to you by 360 Cookware. Their stainless steel cookware uses vapor technology to cook better tasting, more nutritional food. To learn more and receive 20% off, click their logo on our website, heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
There, you listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Arroway. We're here at Roberta's Pizza, and Happy New Year. I think we can officially stop saying that, though, now that we're a week in. But, you know, I love this time of year because it's the time of year that people start talking about making a resolution, usually to cook more, or maybe to cook more healthy, or maybe to try, if you're already a home cook, try out more interesting global cuisines. And I am so honored to start off the year of this show with a huge expert on everything food. He's a food maverick, you could say. And how are you, James?
Yeah, there. Great. I hope I'm an expert.
You're a maverick. That's what I'm calling you, at least. James Osland is the editor-in-chief of Savora Magazine. The magazine has won the James Beard Award 5 times and won over 25 awards. He's also a judge on Top Chef Masters.
Oh, you know what? We've actually won way more than 5 James Beard Awards.
Oh, why did I hear
I don't
that?
Know. I don't know how many. That may have been like last year. We've gotten quite a few more than that over the years. I am proud to say.
That's awesome. So exciting. And I know that you guys have had a couple books so far, and the latest one just came out in November, and it is stunning. It is called The Way We Cook, and it's a travelogue from around the world and portraits of different home cooks. And that just came out, and you're the writer of it. And how was it working on this book? Because I understand that it took about, 10 years of journalism. And it's a compilation of the most fascinating stories and places and foods, of course, from around the world. How did you?
Well, it's funny because the genesis of the book, I wish I had a more glamorous thing to say, but the fact is, it was an idea I had in the shower one day it was about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And what I was realizing was, oh my gosh, there are amazing books out there that show us pictures of all sorts of facets of human life, but I'd never encountered a book that in particular was about what happens inside of our kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sort of, the kind of quiet, primal, great, wonderful, collective, connective thing that people do in their kitchens all over the world, whether, right. The kitchen is like a street stall in a village in Java, or a Paris 3-star kitchen, or, a kind of organic farm home kitchen, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, a couple of billion times over. And really that was the origin of the creation of this book. It's in fact kind of more of a coffee table book than a straight ahead cookbook. It's a book that brings together images, as you were saying, from over the last 10 years of Savour that show cooks cooking.
Right.
Not every single image is of a cook cooking. Some of them are just straight ahead portraits of cooks. Really showing the kind of reverence that we at Savour feel for cooks around the world.
Right, and it connects everyone, as you were saying. It really paints that theme very clearly, that no matter where you are in the world, we all are cooking in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. And I think, I guess maybe during the process of putting the book together, I did have a kind of, maybe there's like, I don't know, this might sound extreme, but maybe there was a little bit of a reactionary quality mm-hmm. that I had, that Dave Weaver, the art director, and myself, it was the two of us that created the book mm-hmm. over the course of many, many weekends. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a lot of food imagery that goes out in the Western world anyway, be it on blogs or in newspapers or in food magazines, does tend to glamorize and in some ways kind of fetishize the process, the act of cooking. And like, you know, chefs
food and, porn.
You know, celebrity yeah. chefs and the whole glamorous world of, you know, food on TV and all of that stuff does get a lot of ink.
Yeah.
You know, at least as far as imagery goes. And really it was our idea to create a book that was a document of global cooking now without giving precedence to celebrity chefs or even to, you know, the Japanese village cook, but really instead just showing this great and fantastic kaleidoscope of cooking all around the world and how beautifully similar it really all is.
Right, and yeah, I think you did these cooks justice. You've made them celebrity chefs now.
Uh-oh.
A bit of, well, not, hopefully that wasn't derogatory. But, you know, going back to what you're saying, Saveur, the magazine, has been, has really set itself apart from the pack of magazines and glossy food magazines out there, the ones surviving, that is, for having a very global and authentic take on food that is, it's not all about just buzz and hype, and it is about finding those stories that are, and those paths that are just untraveled, and talking about the recipes and the type of foods that you don't know about. And I think it's, you know, how has it actually evolved over the years? Because you've been there for how long? 2 decades
I've
or so?
I've been editor-in-chief for going on 7 years now, but I've been involved with the magazine since going back to 1998. I was a contributor to the magazine for many years before I came on board on staff. But, you know, historically, Saveur, which has been around since 1994, next year we will be celebrating our 20th anniversary. The mission of the magazine, you know, the unspoken and actually as it's written, you know, in our tagline, is to, you know, really celebrate global cooking, and again, sort of what I was referencing just a minute or two ago, not giving precedence to any one thing or over the other, mm-hmm. but really celebrating the whole extraordinary mosaic of world cooking,
right.
And not saying that, you know, oh, what this celebrity chef, you know, made at his London restaurant is just so much better than what some grandmother in suburban Chicago made.
Yeah.
I mean, good cooking for us is just completely magical, no matter where it takes place. And we really try to not cast judgment and say that, you know, oh, this fancy thing is better than this not fancy thing. It's all pretty frigging amazing.
Do you find that your audience has maybe changed a bit over the years? Because I imagine in 1994, not a lot of people knew, well, for instance, you know, Asian food was you know, a little bit more exotic to people. And now it's like the hottest, you know, wave of fusion foods are coming out, and they all have like this Japanese twist and you name it. Do you find that people are a little bit more informed and you're writing in a style that has reflected that?
That's an interesting question, and yes and no. Because on the one hand, I mean, you know, I mean, living and breathing food and really in a way kind of the study of food and the way the world eats and cooks for, gosh, really since I was like a kid, a teenager, mm-hmm. it's just always something that's just sort of naturally compelled me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that amazes me the most is every single day I find out new stuff. Certainly at this job that I do, you know, where, you know, the concentrated exploration of the world of food is just basically what we do. Every single day I'm finding out something new that just completely blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the amount of the traditions of global cooking, they don't stop. There's not like some wall. It's something that is just continually evolving and turning into something new and extraordinary every single second. I mean, in a way, I mean, this might sound kind of weird, but like in a way, every time that you as a home cook slightly modify or adjust a dish that you have made, like using a new ingredient or taking it off of the fire a little bit sooner, you're in a way, not in a way, you are contributing to this you know, the extraordinary continuum that is human cooking on the face of the earth. And so it just never stops being fascinating. And, you know, it's hard to gauge who our writers might have been back in 1994 and who they are now, but I can definitely speak for myself. I mean, I first knew Sever in 1994, and even though I'd always been like the food guy and just extremely interested in food, in the world of food, there wasn't really necessarily a food magazine that really spoke to me very well or just really spoke to me at all until Sever came along. And when I got exposed to Sever, it was like, oh my gosh, what is this? This is just the strangest, most interesting magazine, and it really, really approaches and appreciates food in a way that's just very natural to me or very similar to how I do it. And so I was hooked from the get-go.
That's fascinating. And I actually had one of your former colleagues on the show who helped co-found the restaurant, the magazine, the restaurant, Melissa Hersheimer and, no, sorry,
Melissa Hamilton and
Christopher Hersheimer.
Who are great friends of mine. In fact, it was Christopher, in many ways, I consider to be a kind of mentor of mine, who really sort of brought me into the fold back in 1998. So, amazing ladies.
And it seems that it was very forward-thinking, you know, to focus on global food and global eating. And I see it happening more and more. It's becoming a trend amongst the best chefs, whereas once it was all about sort of, you know, French and then Italian. And so I think that, yeah, you guys are keeping it real and just keeping with that theme. And as you were saying, you're constantly exploring things, so it's never ending. Is there something?
It's just never ending, and we really just, you know, we stay the course. It's like, you know, we don't have to, like, you know, mercifully, thankfully, trick up this magazine into being something other than it really is. You know, another thing about Sever and the way we cook, the book that we've just come out, is we are a food magazine and a food brand and a food website, and we make food books. But we're also kind of like we're anthropologists too, sort of really just kind of, you know, showing what we all do, you know, connecting what we all do through this very specific lens, the lens of what happens in our kitchens and what happens at our eating tables.
Yeah, I was going to say the book reminds me almost like of a National Geographic large volume. And yeah, anthropology is definitely a great comparison. So are there any recent food discoveries that blew your socks off?
Maybe there an ingredient are just or constant dish? Ones. I mean, the most recent one, I mean, it just it completely blew me away. I mean, it blew me away. Just happened just 2 days ago. We are working on an article about the food of Georgia, former Soviet Republic Georgia, except now it's its own country, Georgia. Our senior editor, Karen Shimizu, actually lived there for a couple of years, one time with her mom and then when she was growing up, and another time on a Fulbright with her husband. She just completely fell in love with the place and with the food. And it's, I've traveled a lot around the world. I've not been to that part of the world, though. And I've had bits and pieces of Georgian food, actually in Russia and then here in New York City. But I'd never really, like, sat down to a Georgian meal. And so a bunch of us from the magazine, just this last Saturday, took the train the N train all the way out to Gravesend, which is sort of like the netherworld of Brooklyn, an hour plus trip from my home in Manhattan, and ate, had this just great lunch at this Georgian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Where this food for me, the dishes that I was encountering were in a way very familiar and somehow seemed similar to things that I'd eaten and looked at before, but in other ways tasted so completely different and were just so different. And I was, as I said, I was just completely blown away. There was this one dish in particular. It was beans, like kidney beans, mm-hmm. with this paste that I now understand to be, you know, very fundamental to Georgian cooking, made of walnuts and raw garlic, and there was a bit of cumin in it as well. And so these beans were sort of bound together by this pretty thick paste, which sounds a bit odd, but it was so delicious.
That sounds
especially
good.
When you ate it with this lavash bread that was like fresh out of the oven, and it was like my dream food, and I'd never known that it existed before.
I love the sound of that. Wow, that sounds like such a great winter meal. Do you get this when you try something amazing, and do you really want to like just run home and try to recreate it in your own kitchen?
That one, I'm going to wait for us to develop the recipe in the kitchen before I do that. But I got the sense of that most of the food that we were eating, and we had probably about 15 different things at this lunch, was probably pretty makeable in my own kitchen. It didn't feel like there is no way I'm going to try this. It felt like this is actually pretty. I kind of get where this food, I believe, is coming from as far as what goes on with the process of making it.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely there would be things that I would make. And then some other things like the dumplings that came out in the middle of the meal that I probably wouldn't make because dumpllings and things like that sort of perennially scare me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I would rather sort of let experts do that.
Oh, yeah,
kind of thing.
I see. The specialized.
not, I just don't feel like that's just not my... I feel I'm going to mess it up.
No problem. So what do you cook on a you know, we just had a nice... cold, blustery week. Do you spend your weekends trying to cook something? Just to enjoy?
Weekends are always about cooking. And in fact, what I did after I left the Georgian restaurant, just like a block away, there was a Chinese supermarket that it turned out was half Chinese and, well, maybe more than half Chinese, probably two-thirds Chinese, and one-third Russian, because a lot of Russian immigrants live in the neighborhood. And so I filled my cart with, like, half Russian things and then half Chinese staples and, like, immediately went home and started to cook. And, in fact, in front of me right now are the leftovers of some of the fruits of my labors, which was... I'm sorry, I have to say I don't like to, like... You know, but one of the things that I made with this was a lo mein with these fresh Chinese noodles that I stir fried along with this incredibly delicious smoked tofu that I sliced and like pan fried out a little bit with garlic and some Chinese pickled vegetables, some pickled daikon in it as well. And then the most delicious cabbage. It's a cabbage that you often see in Asian markets where it's a bit more flat and oval shaped. It's not like a tight round ball.
Oh, I think that's called Taiwanese cabbage, right?
It can be, definitely, for sure. I've seen it like that. And it's so sweet and almost sugary, this cabbage.
And so tightly packed and like really crunchy. Exactly.
It would make the most delicious coleslaw. And so all of this stuff just stir-fried together along with a bunch of scallions into a casual noodle stir fry, and it was delicious then, and the leftovers are just as delicious today.
Yeah, perfect for lunch. Yum. So is there, I don't know if this is like choosing between children, but is there a favorite cuisine that you kind of lean to or like the best?
You're right, it is choosing between children, but probably, I mean, I had my own personal first big exposures to food outside of American,
okay.
the kinds of foods that I grew up on, in Southeast Asia. And that's still, Southeast Asia for me is just kind of like the pinnacle of world cooking. I mean,
it's from the cradle of flavor, as you wrote in your book.
Yeah, yeah. But from Vietnam, which is not actually in that book, The Cradle of Flavor,
okay.
but to Thailand, which is also not, but also Malaysia, Vietnam, Burma, the food in these places, it's almost like sometimes I go there and it's like, God, what went wrong here? Or what went extremely right? That food culture just, like, it's like food culture times 10,000, where it's just the most insanely food-obsessed place you will ever go to, and the amount of variation, and you go to markets that are literally miles and miles and miles long with thousands of vendors, and you've just never seen anything like it, like the food cultures in Southeast Asia. So, I mean, short answer, Southeast Asia,
yeah.
but inclusive of Vietnam and Thailand and Indonesia and Malaysia, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow, that sounds like that could give anyone a food awakening, as it seemed to have done for you. I think we're just going to go to a quick little musical interlude, and we'll be right back chatting more with James Oslin. Thanks so much.
Excellent.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by AmeriCraft. AmeriCraft and 360 Cookware are proud sponsors of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. AmeriCraft is an American company, and like Heritage Radio Network, they provide the best. Their 360 Cookware is made of the highest quality ingredients, like United States steel. It is made in the greenest cookware manufacturing plant in the world. AmeriCraft makes great cookware and is focused on improvement. 360 Cookware is their exclusive line. It's a contemporary line of cookware and bakeware intended to let you, the Heritage Radio Network listeners, have a unique cooking experience. Its vapor seal allows food to be cooked in its natural juices, preserving all of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients without added water, oils, or fats. 360 Cookware invites you to learn more about how this process works on their website, www.360cookware.com.
All right, we're back on Let's Eat In, and today's guest is James Oslin, Editor-in-Chief of Saveur. How's it going?
It's going great.
So we got so carried away talking about those delicious food, I could talk forever about that and hear your stories, but maybe a less fun topic. I wanted to ask you, because your writing is so... And, you know, working with Saveur and these new books, the new book that has come out, you're definitely, I know Saveur has an online presence and a great blog, actually. But what do you think about print food journalism and its place today in a world, you know, filled with Instagram and blogs and, you know, all sorts of social media?
Well, I don't know. I mean, from where I sit, I just tend to be, this might sound kind of Pollyanna, but I tend to be just genuinely thrilled by all the stuff that's out there right
mm-hmm.
now and the potential of all of that stuff that's out there right now, and also the potential to start making new forms of things that right now at this exact moment and at the beginning of 2013 that we can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, take for instance, like back in 1998 when I was first doing my very first Saveur stories with Christopher Hersheimer, we basically... Actually, the very first story that I did do was down in Baltimore, which is a place my parents come from. I'm originally from California, but Christopher and I worked on a feature for Saveur about Baltimore, this city that I loved as a kid so much. And basically, we, you know, Christopher and I went down there, and she took, you know, super beautiful pictures of these places in Baltimore markets, people's homes, restaurants, and we published the print magazine, and there were pictures in it, probably only about, you know, 1% of the pictures that Christopher took made it into print, and then I wrote an article, and we had, like, you know, 7 or 8 recipes with it and a couple of sidebars that went along with the article. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the stuff that we can do, like even just with that general configuration, mm-hmm. where we can add on an extra slideshow to our tablet edition, yeah. or online that shows another 100 mm-hmm. of those beautiful images that maybe Christopher took. We can put together a video that, you know, I'm encouraging all of our photographers, like, start shooting video, even if you just run off, like, 2 minutes of, like, you know, yeah. tape, except it's not really tape, that you think is, like, kind of, like, nonsensical. We're going to make something out of it. We will have extra recipes. We will have extra information sources, and, like, you know, you can click here and, like, find that obscure ingredient, and so on and so forth. And it's just sort of endless and just yeah. so thrilling, and I don't feel remotely scared by it. I mm-hmm. think that print has its place. I mean, there's something about the object, the object that you hold in your hands, yeah. or you keep on your nightstand or your coffee table or in your kitchen or whatever, and you refer to it, and the physical way in which you interact with it or a book, like the way we cook. That's one thing, and I don't know for sure, of course, but I don't predict that that's probably really going anywhere, at least maybe not in my lifetime, mm-hmm. at least not for the next 20 or 30 years, I guess. But I don't know. I'm just completely genuinely psyched. One of the yeah. things that we're doing at Sever.com right now that I'm very, very, very psyched about is a video festival, a global food video festival. It's basically just going live right now.
Wow.
And we're seeking submissions from all over the world, from people submitting short food videos, stuff that could be just shot on their iPhone or stuff that's maybe more elaborately produced. Generally, it's short form. They're not, like, long mm-hmm. videos. But we're really looking to see, you know, really cast the net and find extraordinary content out there that can not only make us better cooks, but make us understand the world better through
right.
through what it cooks and eats.
Sounds like a travelogue, but people just send it in. And I think that, who knows what'll happen? That's so exciting. And we have yet to see. So, fun stuff. I can't wait.
It is. I am just so thrilled about this one. I can't wait for it to come to fruition and see all the entries. And, you know, and it's not only, like, travelogue stuff. It could be technique stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
But technique
right.
stuff coming from, you know, a Paris home kitchen.
Yeah.
Showing us something that, you know, just might be just like a real epiphany to get a look at it.
And who knows? That could be maybe a future fodder for another book like this. So one quick question, though. I notice, and I've heard others bemoan this, that you are not on Twitter. You are on Twitter, though. You just never tweet.
I'm on Twitter.
What's up
I
with
have,
that?
Like, Twitter's shyness. You know what's funny?
You have,
that
like, 700 followers, and you haven't tweeted at all.
You know, I haven't. I've been, you know, it's weird, because on the one hand, I live a sort of public life,
yeah.
and I go on a TV show and whatever. But, like, on the other hand, I guess if I analyze myself, I'm sort of private.
Mm.
But that said, I have been, I think, probably unconsciously for the last couple of months or so, been doing a dress rehearsal on, like, well, what would it be if I actually really posted this stuff? Like, I'm just, I don't
warming
know,
up
just,
to
like,
it.
Kind of slightly freaked out by it, and I'm afraid, I don't know, I will enter the Matrix
right.
and never come out. But I have been privately doing stuff that definitely has a tweet-like quality, you know, even at this lunch, this wonderful Georgian lunch that we were at the other day, I took some, you know, beautiful still lives of some of the food, and it's like, well, and then I'm thinking, gosh, do I have to hoard this just for myself? Let me send it out to the world. It's a beautiful picture. So, but anyway, I don't know.
That's funny.
I don't know. You can convince me.
Yeah,
that.
You know, take your time. It could be like that vortex that you enter, but, you know, you're entitled to your privacy, and who cares? I mean, yeah, I mean, don't be pressured is what I mean. If that's the way you'd rather, you know, there's a lot of sharing, as you superfluous sharing on the internet. But, you know, then again, I wouldn't mind seeing that Georgian feast. So
I know exactly. And that's what I come away with at the end of the day. It's like, oh, I should, you know, send that out into the world. It's not like, I don't know, a picture of my sock drawer or something like that. It's not, you know what I mean? It's a little more interesting, I hope.
Well, I think so, definitely. But, yeah, I guess we'll have yet to see. One last question. This goes out to every guest on this show, but what is your idea of the ultimate date meal?
I'm just so purist and so kind of simple in what I like to eat and what I would want to eat at a romantic occasion. I mean, I could say that it would be some amazing chefy thing at some amazing chefy restaurant, and there would be all of these foods that I had no previous involvement with, and I had no idea what they were and whatever, and it's so exotic. And but really, for me, just like super simple food, like garlic rice or rice, you know, really good, perfectly rice, really perfectly cooked beans, like black beans, red beans with a lot of garlic, a beautiful, beautiful salad, something, a very simple protein that could even just be like a perfectly fried egg, like in a really good olive oil, a really good egg fried in a really good olive oil with just, you know, golden crusty edges and just faintly soft on the inside, or maybe just some, like, you know, pan-fried really perfect fish. Just very, wow, very, very simple, basic food that hasn't been too tricked up. That's definitely always the stuff that I gravitate toward.
That's the romantic. That's the pure romantic dinner. That sounds awesome. Well, thank you so much for all your time, and I definitely am going to start cooking some of these amazing recipes in The Way We Cook, Portraits of Home Cooks Around the World. Everyone, check it out. So thanks again, James Osland. It was great to have you on.
It's been great talking to you.
All right. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Let's Eat In.
Bye, you guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.